News, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Arwig.
Good morning from Dan and Dalton. It is Mobile Mornings, 8:07 with the award-winning nappy winners, Dan and Dalton, Mobile Mornings on FM Talk 106.5. The station itself won awards, so we had a lot to go around. We had a good night that summer night downtown Mobile.
Yeah, hope to do it again here in a few months. It's been a heck of a year here at FM Talk 106.5, mostly because it's been a heck of a year
everywhere.
With news from all corners of the earth. I mean, it's just unbelievable what's gone down in 2024. You think 2025 will be more calm or more 2024-ish?
Depends on how the press wants to treat Trump. You know, if they treat him like the president of the United States with a little regard, and they don't take it upon themselves to criticize every time he jaywalks.
Yeah.
You know, but we'll see. I think there's, you know, I'm just seeing so many stories about optimism. There was a recent study that came out that small business people are as optimistic as they've been in a long time.
Yeah.
And if you own a small business, you're probably one of those. And we've got so many of our listeners are also our advertisers, and they own small businesses in Mobile, and they actually do business with each other like a co-op. But the word is that you're seeing a brighter future with Trump, and I think a lot of Americans are. So if that is reflected in the news rather than poo-pooed, we'll see.
Yeah, and they might see better ratings if they were to maybe nod their head to some of those people who were feeling that way. And then, of course, statewide and especially here locally, going into 2025, we've got the mayoral election coming up at the end of this year. And I think 2025 will be the year of construction. As much construction as we've seen this year with the new Civic Center Arena starting to go up as the other one comes down, as we start to hopefully see progress on the I-10 Mobile River Bridge project, so much road work going on around here. It will be the year of construction and maybe slowdowns. But look, 2-3 years in the future, we're going to have entirely different looking city downtown anyway.
You're right. The airport, the Civic Center,
Amtrak.
Amtrak. And are you familiar with Bulwark? It's a left-leaning...
Yes, the Bulwark.
Bulwark.
Is it left-leaning? Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, far left.
I've heard of it.
So Jonathan Last, can I share this with you real quick?
I thought
I've got to tell Dalton about this because it's like, did he actually say it out loud? You know, the left paints themselves as the ones that care more, the ones that are caring.
More empathetic.
Empathetic, yeah. Right. So Last is the editor of that, I guess you would say, online publication. And one of the great champions of the working people, labor activist Cesar Chavez, he was against illegal immigration, by the way. Chavez was against it. He understood how it not only hurt the wages of the working class, but their power to negotiate with the growers. Chavez, of course, known for mobilizing those who came across the border to work, but he was not for illegals being here at all. So here's what Last has said about the illegal immigration problem right now.
Okay.
Trump threatening to take him to deport millions.
And by the way, the Bulwark, they don't sell themselves as far left. They're like an offshoot of the Lincoln Project. They're formerly conservatives. It's like the neocon Never Trumper group there that certainly shifted left just because of their hate for Trump.
Well, he's talking about being a Democrat here, basically. And he says Democrats should spend exactly zero political capital stopping any Trump deportation efforts. Now, you don't hear that from the left often. He claims to be on the left, by the way. Mm-hmm. So he then added this admission. It is madness to spend capital trying to help people who are no longer a major part of your electoral coalition. So he's saying if these illegals are not going to be dependable Democrat voters, what do we need them for?
So he's saying, hey, I know this might hurt some feelings, but if we're just talking strategy, cut them out.
And he's not even just kind of, I mean, he's coming out and saying this is, we shouldn't spend any capital on illegal immigrants who now it's looking like they're not even going to be voting for us anyway. So why would we?
Yeah.
So this goes from the Democrats or the left saying that, quit, you know, we feel more than you, we empathize more than you, you're cold-hearted. You have these 12 to 19 million illegals in the nation. Of course, we don't have to go over the stats about how many of them are whatever we wouldn't want here. Undesirables in terms of criminal activity and things like that. Maybe out of the jails from where they're from and all. He's just coming out and saying it. Mm. We don't really care about that. What we care about is hoarding as many voters as we can get. And now if it's being shown that they're not going to vote our way, get them out of here.
Yeah. I have,
isn't that amazing?
I seriously doubt that that take will catch on at all on the left.
We'll
and
see.
That will be probably their main, you know, call nope. is against the immigration here over the next year. And I think, you know, you've heard Jeff Poore talk about some of the writers on AL.com, not necessarily writing for the people who are reading those stories
right.
in the state, but there's so many out-of-state folks who want to read about Alabama and read about how terrible this conservative state is and the things that are going wrong, and they write for the Damn. People that are reading
yeah.
AL.com. This guy with the bulwark, complete never Trump, and I don't know this man, his specific story, yeah. but just that crew... when they became the Lincoln Project, and I believe that those are the same kind of crew it's running funny. Around there, because you have Bill Kristol's part of the bulwark there on Substack.
Well.
And so you've got, like, you know, this, they are writing for those people who...
They're writing for each
maybe,
other.
Maybe, you know, saying, okay, now it's time to cut the cord with the illegal immigrants because they're not helping us any farther. A lot of those on the left feel that their heart is in the right place in that argument they're making, and they're not going to go for that. No.
So... I got this from Breitbart. So Breitbart categorized them as far left.
Okay, gotcha.
So, yeah. you know, that's where I got it anyway.
I might be missing that. I just, you know, some of the names on there seem familiar as part of the Lincoln Project.
You're so right, Dalton. The way, again, I think the images and the narratives around those being deported, that's going to be a key. Now, again, I think that it's pretty much the mandate was given to them. Like, yeah, we're against all that. Make it happen. But if they can pull some strings to make us tear up a little bit when we see certain stories, that's probably going to be the strategy of a lot of the mainstream media.
Yeah. The last 4 years, it's been the Republicans' chance to go to the border and complain about what's going on. Before that, we had 4 years of AOC going to the border and crying as she looked at the rounded up illegal immigrants. So another 4 years of the Democrats doing the same thing.
She hadn't been in the border in 4 years. She went down there for that photo op, and that was it.
Yeah, I believe so. So that first story you had this morning, and I know it's probably not leading in the A block for many news organizations, but I could see the border issue as we have our eyes on so many things, economics and Trump's plans that might involve tariffs or might not involve tariffs, domestic unrest, which we've seen a whole lot over the last week and a half.
Even after the Penny verdict.
Yes, and although not as much as maybe some people assumed yeah. Would happen after that. And then, of course, all the international things going on. Think about the border and every day what Border Patrol is experiencing there. If these cartels, somebody was talking about how much more money they are making, the cartels, that is, being paid to take people across the border, the money they're making being coyotes, and then the money they're making with the, I guess, the even worse forms of human trafficking. If that's it's human trafficking to take people across the border if they let them go, and then they're, you know,
and human if they escape, don't let them go.
But yeah, if they take them across and then sell them into some,
yeah.
you know, terrible, terrible thing that we know is going on, they're doing that too, and they're making a lot of money all the while bringing drugs across. Cartels are raking in more money than they ever have, and it's thanks to human trafficking and fentanyl. If Trump is successful in shutting down the border, you think the cartel is just going to go away?
No.
Say, well, it was fun while it lasted.
No, they're not. And that's the whole thing. That really hasn't even been calculated with all this, that the previous administration, or the current, you could say, for the next month or so, they allowed all this to happen, and in doing so, it wasn't just illegals coming here and suddenly being in Martha's Vineyard. That was the least of anybody's worry. What it did was it built up this gigantic machine of commerce now and they're not going to let that go away. Mm. They're not like saving it all. So they look. Can you imagine if you had a business that was doing incredibly well, and suddenly some government force came in and said, "You got to shut this down."
Yeah,
you're like, "No, I don't."
You would try to find a way to stay in business,
and they're going to try to find a way because the money's too good.
Yeah, and I think
so. Now you're fighting that on top of that.
Then that means there may be very well a war at the southern border.
Yeah,
and there's been talk in the past of sending special ops down there to take care of individual problems with cartels, but could we possibly see maybe a larger force that is actually going down to fight the cartels? Is that something we might see here in the next few years? I think it's something to keep an eye on.
Well, is that something that, I mean, would Mexico have to sign off on it if any of the deaths occurred in Mexican territory as opposed to the U.S.? I mean, I'm not quite sure how you do it. It is a border.
Mm-hmm.
It is like one side or the other.
Well,
I don't know.
Does the Mexican government have any bit of control over what the cartels do?
Doesn't
or don't
seem like
do.
They do.
Yeah. So now, what good does it make if they tell you you can't do it?
Well, in Mexico itself, maybe that would be illegal. I don't know. I don't know enough about all that stuff.
Well,
but this thing is brewing, and it's brewing because of the last 4 years, and this business has gotten to be such a business. You're just not going to be able to grapple, just kind of free them up from it, just grab it from them, and they're just going to go away.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see that right now with all the rhetoric down at the border.
We have a text on the text line. We actually have several. Good morning, guys. Do you have a Bankhead Tunnel update, please? I do not. I'll see if Leanna can get maybe an Al.cam cam on it. People should be able to make it through. You had a box truck earlier this morning, I believe traveling eastbound, that tried to make it through the tunnel. Completely peeled up. All clear? All right. Thank you, Leanna. Yeah, completely clear there through the Bankhead as of now. So you should be able to make it through. But yeah, another box truck. And this one got the whole roof, it looks like, all the way peeled back. You were asking, Dan, you know, we talk about the vehicles and the damage they've gotten over the years from the Bankhead. What about the Bankhead itself? I wonder how many centimeters or inches off of either entrance we've lost over the years with vehicles ramming into them.
Yeah, I mean, you have to, if the Bankhead gets hit, you got damage to the truck, but don't you have damage to the tunnel too?
Yeah, it's slowly getting smaller.
I would think
with every truck that runs
also,
into it.
Also, your line about the AC units.
Oh yeah,
hilarious.
The Bankhead tunnel, because you have the ACs on so many of these RVs that get knocked off.
John Daly's.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the Bankhead has done more damage to the air conditioner industry than the far left in this country has.
I love that.
Or actually, I guess it'd be good for the industry because then these folks have to go out and buy new ACs.
Repairs or new purchases.
So, and put another point on the board for the Bankhead Tunnel. Things are clear traveling through there right now. 8:19, coming back, more Mobile Mornings on the way. We'll get to more of these texts, plus the Civic Center, and more than just possibly a minor league hockey team coming, but youth hockey, fun skates for the community.
This is something you know a little bit about.
A little bit. Yeah, let's get into this when we come back after the break. 251-343-0106.
Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5, 8:23 on Mobile Mornings. A lot to get to, including your text at 251-343-0106.
8:24. So yesterday at the Mobile City Council meeting, they got to a lot, including 200 acres of city-owned property that will go towards housing. This group, RAIN. RAIN, and this is all to do with the homeless, reinvesting, aiding, and inspiring our neighbors. So the city is contributing the 200 acres there of property on Shelton Beach Road, developing a resource center and housing for the homeless. And this is all part of Public Safety Director Lasky's plan here, kind of a all-encompassing plan to help deal with crime in the city. And he says, this will help, I believe. So that was pretty big news yesterday. And they also shared updates on the Civic Center project, which, as far as that goes, all good news, which is rare when we're talking about a project. Really, any massive construction project these days always seems to come in over budget and late. But that is not currently the case with the Civic Center
project. Yeah, anything that's got the name of Alabama attached to it, of course, we're in Mobile. It's our last name.
Yes.
Mobile, Alabama.
It's our surname for sure. So the parking lot coming down, or the parking lot going up, they said that the southern part of it, and I'm trying to find my full story here, the southern part of it's fully done, and or 100%, close to 100% done. Northern part of that parking deck, about halfway done. They'll wrap that up at the end of April. It's almost $1 million under budget, parking facility.
That's amazing. Can I go ahead and park in the southern, like go up to the top floor?
That would be a question for, I thought about that when we were out there for the Veterans Day parade.
Yeah.
Said, what's keeping us from bringing the van in and putting it in the new parking deck?
Look, if you've got half of it done, I don't want to go. I don't want to drive my car to the area where it's not done. But I'll be happy to have a fourth deck space in the area that's done.
Yeah, the Civic Center demolition's well underway. You know that if you've driven by, and then they'll take those massive murals down, put them in the expo hall, and then move them to their permanent home following that. The demolition, they say, is $2.4 million under budget, and they want to start that, finish that by March 17th, and then bidding also currently going out for the building of the new arena. So that's all great news. And then the mayor yesterday, there's been some talk of ice hockey maybe returning to the city, and Mayor Stimson talked quite a bit about that. He talked about potentially bringing a team back to Mobile. They visited the Jacksonville, Florida minor league hockey team and discussed the idea with officials from our arena partner, Oakview Group, along with team ownership there in Jacksonville. Stimson toured the practice facility, which is what they call the Igloo. It's in an old mall, has two rinks that they say children and others could use. And once if they were to do this, the minor league team would play in the new Civic Center Arena, would have this practice rink, and sounds like the mayor says he'd like to use some sort of practice rink to get maybe youth hockey going or fun skates around this time of year where the community can come out. Maybe ice skating lessons, I guess, would be in the mix there. They said a local poll showed about 65% of respondents support the return of hockey. What about you? I loved going to Mystics games for the short, I guess, when I got here. The Mystics were still going pretty strong. We came to a bunch of games when we moved down. My family moved down around 2000, and we started coming to the games. I think the Mystics were in for another 4 or 5 years, maybe 6 years after that. We went to as many as we could. I wanted to play youth hockey because that's what I was doing up in Nashville, and they didn't have it here.
Right.
I feel like they had it at one point or another. Youth hockey. Somebody on the text line, maybe let me know. 251-343-0106.
I don't. If they had it, I don't remember it. We got here in '95, so Joseph was little, like 3 or 4. Zach was 13 or so, and we went to a few games, but attendance did dwindle.
That's the problem, right? Yeah, exactly. So when you look at this, do you think that it would be worth it? And, you know, take into account there are a lot of people who probably want to get out there and do some skating, and maybe especially this time of year. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of rec league hockey going around the South. I know that's a big deal in Pensacola. And similar cities to ours, I mean, Jacksonville is quite a bit bigger, obviously. But you look at some cities that have minor league teams that seem to be successful, Pensacola is one of them.
Pensacola is one of them. And just it's funny the way these communities are so close to each other. Mobile is actually a larger city by a fair amount than Pensacola, and yet Pensacola draws pretty well with their baseball, their new stadium there, but it's new, but it's maybe 10 years old now. Their hockey has their Ice Flyers, I guess. Mm-hmm. I mean, they've been around for a while. And it's funny how in Mobile, it's simply an event will draw people in, but to invest in every game of the season, for whatever reason, Mobile's not that kind of town.
Yeah, and it might have gotten to the point here, and I don't know. I'd love to see like a financial breakdown for a lot of these teams that are in similar cities to ours.
And by the way, Stimson said that the owners are going to put up all the money. The city would have nothing to do with
that. And that there would be investors.
Yeah.
It'd be similar to some teams you see around there where instead of one majority owner, and there might be a majority owner in this instance, but you get more investors, people who actually want to put something on the line to bring it back. This texter said, I went to a Mystics game one time when there was a friend of mine. He said, like, there was a friend of mine and 10 other people in the stands. Mobile doesn't support things like that. I doubt that these other arenas are selling out every night. The cost might be, and that's why I say I want to see a financial breakdown. You might be able to bring in a team that only sees a few hundred people a night, and it'd still not be a major financial loss, but would it be enough to offset that you've got these ice rinks that are being used?
Also, you get the beautiful new Civic Center could draw people on its own just to check out the arena.
And whatever builds up around it, too.
Exactly. Dan and Dalton, 830. morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5, 8:35. Mobile mornings. Well, this looks a whole lot better out there. We had clouds yesterday, and it was kind of warm, and then suddenly the sun almost peaked out. Well, it did. It got up to 79 degrees for our high. Muggy, waiting on the rain, 79 degrees in Mobile yesterday.
Yeah, I hopped out once I got home. You jump out of the vehicle and you're like, I'm just going to take care of a few things outside. I don't need to go change or anything. Nothing too major. And I started walking around, you know, doing things in the yard.
Sweating.
I looked up and I was like, good Lord, when did it get so hot? It's like crazy. May right now.
it was crazy. It was so stinking hot yesterday. And now we're going to enjoy this bright sunshine. Now it looks like the clouds have blown away and cooler temperatures. So just dress properly and enjoy.
Let's go through the texts we've received. Fire Dog says maybe we should get an A-level baseball team or a maritime museum. I think we should start Thunderdome to reduce inmate population. Good Lord, people, do I have to think of everything?
Fire Dog, that is a great one.
The Real Sam says Pensacola is also a pretty transient city. A lot of people from bigger cities probably help support the baseball and hockey. I wonder how much of this plan, and when you look at the end of the Mystics term here, how few people were showing up at the games. If you get a new arena, and then, you know, saying, hey, people will come to the new arena, what's the shelf life on that? Just the how excited you are about having somewhere new to go. So, all right, we have a new arena. That's one thing. You've got this bridge, the new bridge in Bayway. That should make it easier for folks in Baldwin County to get over in and on time for the game. If there's new restaurants and maybe even shopping opportunities right there near the Civic Center Arena, or you talk about that, you know, the Bayfront property that they plan to build up there near the convention center that will be a hotel or maybe a living space. I can't remember, but they'll have plenty of other things there too. So what I'm saying is that particular kind of area
could be attractive on its own, right?
Right. So will that be enough to put that over the edge to where the city could support an ice hockey team? You look at some of the other cities in the South that have ECHL teams, which I believe is what we would
East Coast Hockey League,
which is like, you know, a couple steps below the minor leagues for the NHL, right? More or less. And Duluth, Georgia has a team.
That's basically Atlanta area. Okay, that might be where the Mystics are.
That's the Atlanta Gladiators. I wonder, was that the Mystics? It might have been.
They moved up to Gwinnett County.
That was the Mystics. Yeah. You're right. Yeah. So that was the Mystics, the Atlanta Gladiators, who are up there near Atlanta now. You have the Florida Everblades.
Love that name.
Greenville, South Carolina has a team. Jacksonville, Florida has a team. Orlando, Florida has a team. Savannah, Georgia may be the most comparable to our size. They have the Savannah Ghost Pirates. That started a... They founded them in 2022, so they haven't been around very long.
Yeah, they've got a brand new arena there.
And then you also have the South Carolina Stingrays, which are in Charleston. So they're having at least enough success to keep those teams around. The question is, could Mobile do the same? Chris in Orange Beach said the reason an ice hockey team doesn't do well in Mobile is because Mobile has the rednecks. Pensacola, however, is full of snowbirds. They go watch ice hockey. Well, I got to tell you, Chris, there's a lot of snowbirds that have come into your county, Baldwin County. Even since, how many have come in since the Mystics went away?
It could be that Mobile has changed enough in about 20 years where things could be different. Also, I was checking on this, and Pensacola also has got, you've got 16,000 military at NAS Pensacola, and they're a lot of them are rotating in and out, and they're looking for something to do while they're there temporarily. Mm-hmm. Whatever.
Yeah, and they have a good rec league team too.
Yeah,
I've known of a couple people who've played in that over the years. Jerry Fort Morgan says Mobile supports wrestling and nothing else. Pretty good support for high school football too, but wrestling. Sean says I play in beer league over at the Bay Center. We get the ice when it's available, usually late at night. They have the Junior Ice Flyers Youth Hockey League. They travel to Pelham and other cities to play. This texter says, the You Suck cheerleaders ruined hockey in Mobile. So you didn't like the people that were up there shouting the chants at the other teams. That's, for some people, that's the most fun of the game, where you get to
be rude. Well, I took Joseph when he was 4 years old to a game. And he had some sort of blue icy or something like that. Like everything but his eye. Well, his eyes are blue. So anyway, he was blue his entire mouth area. I tried to wipe him down, and I swiped him out of there and said, that was a lot of fun, wasn't it? It was at the end of the second period. we were, and then turn on the radio, and the game was on. And
yeah.
He started alerting me, Daddy, they're still playing.
Your plan almost worked.
Almost.
Keep the text coming, 251-340-1106. I did want to get to a couple more about other items we were discussing. The Todd from Grand Bay's first time playing college football pick'em, finished tied for 38th. Can't wait till next year. Yeah, good. Great job, Todd. I saw Irish Indian, Sheila Lee texting in about their where they finished the year. Congratulations to Ed, who is the big winner of our FM Talk 106.5 College Pick'em Challenge. We'll get to Ed and let him know what he's won here shortly. Leo said, morning, guys. So who is paying for the homeless subdivision on Shelton Beach Road? The way I understand it is the city has owned those 200 acres for some time now, and the city is giving the acreage over to this Rain Group, which will be the ones who are, you know, aiding the homeless here with the resource center, single family housing and apartments. Dale Leash wrote this up yesterday with Lanyap. RAIN, an acronym meaning reinvesting, aiding, and inspiring our neighbors. And the founder is Monique Rogers. She said the housing and center would not only help the homeless, but also ex-offenders and other community members. 200 acres, pretty large plot right there on Shelton Beach Road. The group participates in outreach programs and reaching out to the homeless. They do, food drives, school supplies, and things of that nature. Right now, the city is only in on the property. They're selling that to the organization for a, quote, nominal fee. But Public Safety Director Rob Lasky said the city will also in the future help develop a diversion program. So I'm not sure of the cost on that.
I'm not either. That's something that I need to dive into and understand better.
The land deal is up for the council next week regarding that 200-acre plot.
Interesting, and I'll try to boil this down a little bit. Interesting opinion piece. It's an article about Joe Biden's pretty much disappeared. And he's very resentful of the Democratic Party. He doesn't give a rip about them. And they're now growing more and more resentful of him. And yet, he's still got a month to go as the president of the United States, not a small job.
Right. And when they say he disappeared, I mean, he's been in the public eye, but he's not really commenting on anything critical.
And he's been out of the country, too.
That's, yes.
He was abroad for a week and a half or something like that. Here's one quote, a White House official. He's been so cavalier and selfish about how he approaches the final weeks of the job. That's a White House official talking about Biden. His low profile since the election has contributed to the sense of rudderlessness that's taken hold. That's probably internationally they've noticed that as well, right? What's going on? The White House says that, and Biden, they say, has shown little interest in helping chart the party's future beyond January 20th, the day of Trump's inauguration. He has focused his aides and energies largely on managing the presidential transition and tending to a few final meant to burnish up his legacy, including a speech on the economy. So he's not really focused on a whole lot, and the people around him are noticing this. So you have a press corps with him as he's traveling around the world here recently? He gave no interviews. It was a total of 7 words he said to the press in that week and a half traveling around the world.
Wow.
So directly talking to the press.
Yeah.
So you have outlets saying, well, is it worth it even?
Yeah, they're out there saying, why am I even here?
Yeah, the expense of sending people there.
But do you think this has been, of course, he's talked to the press more over his presidency, but as far as his actual control over what happens with the United States.
I don't know.
I doubt he's had, maybe he's had input. I picture that they've had these big meetings there in the West Wing or maybe in one of those, you know, skiffs that they have all the high level talks, and they bring Biden in for his daily presidential briefing and discussions with the top brass. Then he leaves, and then they have the real meeting without Biden. That's how I picture it's been going down the last 3 years. Now he's just not showing up to that first meeting.
Yeah, we need to get Jake Sullivan on our show and find out what's really going on. There's two prongs in this whole thing that the writer of this article says are very evident. Number one, Biden really doesn't want a thing to do to help the Democrats. He doesn't want to. He didn't want to help.
Right.
And
why would he?
Because he feels a certain way. And then the other thing is, think about this. You have all these people around him. Guess what? They don't want to have anything to do with him. So he's like yesterday's news anyway. He's putting up a cold shoulder to them, and they're saying, hey, screw you. We don't like you either. That's how this presidency is winding down. Isn't that crazy?
It is.
And I think the nail in the coffin of all of this was the Hunter Biden pardon. And that was the final you know, blank you.
Yeah.
To anybody that cared. And the way he then took the time to come up with throwing his own DOJ under the bus saying, hey, man.
It was political.
They were like weaponized. Oh, we've never heard of that before. It's like he blamed his own DOJ, and it was completely false what he said. Had nothing to do with reality. It's just like he doesn't care.
Yeah, and in the meantime, with 40 days now until Trump takes office, I think we're around 40 days.
40 or 41.
It's almost like the Biden administration is a group of criminals, you know, robbing the bank, and the alarm's going off, and they know the cops are on the way, but they're just trying to get as much as they can before. So all of this money, and much of it pre-approved by Congress to go to Ukraine, they are just dumping it, getting it out as quickly as they can because— You know, if Trump comes in, he might pull that off the table.
Yeah.
And then also all the quote unquote green energy money, they've made no bones about that. And the energy director, whatever her name is, she said, yeah, we're trying to get all of that out before Trump comes into office. So that's kind of what it like. All right, 40 days, everyone. Let's finish up before Trump comes in and changes everything.
Think about what the job was around the White House in April or March of this past year, back in the spring or late winter. You know, you had an election coming up. You're pretty excited about your job. This is a big deal. We have to mobilize and we've got campaigns going on. Things are happening at breakneck pace. And you're probably energized to be on the job. And then the debate happens. And then he gets kicked to the side. And then Kamala comes in. And then you lose.
Yeah.
I mean, you talk about, I doubt that any of them want to be there. You know, you often watch a football team struggling with their record. You think, how do these guys even show up to work? Or if it's a college team, they're obligated. But it's like, how do you play in that losing environment? It's a very losing environment right now.
Yeah. Well, according to that Ernst report, they're not showing up to work. Only 6% show up full time.
Well, there's that. Yeah.
Gardner says this administration is trying to set booby traps for Trump and empty all the coffers before takeover. Joel says, you need to tell me that the homeless need 200 acres. That's a very large plot of land. The city's making a stupid decision. This could be a very, very well investment for something. He also says, I just don't believe 65% of the people in Mobile County are supportive of ice hockey. Why the hell do y'all think it went away when it was here to start with? Because it sucks. Thank you, Joel.
Joel's usually not that critical.
Let me tell you something I'm fired up about before we get Jeff Poor on here in this last segment. With this Mangione arrest. In Altoona, Pennsylvania, and the reward that was put out there. Remember, we started with just the NYPD reward.
10 grand.
For information was 10 grand. Then the FBI came in and said, I'll raise you. And they added their own $50,000 reward. So you were looking at $60,000 for whoever turned in this killer. Now they're saying it's not immediately clear who, if anyone, will get the cash now that an arrest has been made. So the story is that he went into this Altoona McDonald's. I've heard that a front counter person recognized him. Now, others in the restaurant are saying he looked familiar and stuff like that, too. But I think it was one person who kind of set this whole chain in motion.
Okay.
And that ended up going up to the manager. And then they make the call. The local police come by, say, yep, that's him, and take him off to jail. Now, according to FBI rules, a tipster can't nominate themselves to collect the reward. So you better have a good friend. They said the employee would
have... A good friend that would like $30,000.
The employee would have to be put forward by an investigating agency. So I don't know if that means that Altoona PD can nominate or that sheriff's office there or whether it has to be like a federal bureau of investigation that nominates. They would then have to cut through a bunch of red tape in order to make a claim.
Gosh.
Sounds like it's harder to get a reward from the FBI than win the Powerball. The rewards are often only paid out if the arrest leads to a conviction.
Yeah.
Now, this is a massive, massive problem if they don't pay this out and make it clear that they paid it out because this person, this town, is catching such heat from these ridiculous supporters of this murderer that life, at least temporarily, I imagine, for some of the folks up there in Altoona has become hell. And so you're telling them, or the next person who's supposed to catch a killer, hey, we'll give you this big reward. This happens. These people are catching hell. You're not going to pay the reward out to them? What kind of BS is that? Or at least make it more clear what you plan to do.
I agree.
Yesterday, the story was Mangione's new defense lawyer, who they're not saying, they're saying he's not a public defender, but they're not saying whether his well-to-do family is paying for the defense.
Mm-hmm.
But he was in court fighting Mangione's extradition to New York. Of course, he's facing a lot of charges, including second-degree murder. They read through his manifesto. He was going all after the healthcare industry there. Of course, he's garnered quite a bit of support. But they're saying that extradition process could take as long as a month. So he might be in Pennsylvania for some time here.
By the way, you were saying that the people that are supporting this guy or showing some sort of political support toward this guy's actions, just walking up to someone and shooting them in the back. Are you kidding me? Jon Stewart did a joke the other day on his online show, and when he said, well, the guy's been caught, there was a groan in the audience.
Jeez.
There was a groan in the audience.
Wow. What was everybody's been saying? So, to the left, Daniel Penny is an evil man, but this Mangione is a hero. You got your priorities backwards there.
Morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5. Mobile Morning's going to go to Jeff Poor here in just a moment, preview his show. He's live in the Fairhope Bureau. Speaking of Baldwin County, John is in Robertsdale. John, good morning.
Good morning. My biggest concern is this girl went out of her way at her job to report this, and, you know... McDonald's, they're not making the biggest, best wages there is. I mean, she probably was really probably counting on, stepping up, being a good Samaritan and getting that damn $60,000 to probably change her life completely.
Mm-hmm.
And for the audacity of the FBI to start coming out with all these little ways of not giving this girl her money, it just really is, the FBI's got marks on them now that the public don't trust them with the way they handle stuff. And for the people, you think people's going to go out of their way now? Even before they were, we really need people to step up. And then when they do, there you go.
Mm-hmm. No, it should be like,
Good point, John.
What's that organization that would show up to homes with massive checks? I guess there's several that do that.
Publishers Clearinghouse.
You should show up when something like this happens. With a Publishers Clearinghouse check.
Well, now you're talking about people that are threatening.
Well, yeah. I mean, you could blur out the faces or anything, but make it clear that you're paying out for somebody putting their life on the line to turn in. And I seriously doubt this person was even thinking of the money initially.
Might not have even known about the money anyway.
Who knows? But they've got to pay this out, and they've got to make it clear that you will be rewarded when you put yourself on the line to do something like that.
Yep. Jeff Poor Show from the Fairhope Bureau. Good morning, Jeff.
Good morning, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, of course. So who do we have coming up on the Jeff Poor Show today?
Gary Palmer, congressman from the 6th Congressional District, Joy Clark from News Talk 93.1 in Montgomery, and House Majority Leader Scott Stathagen will be with us.
Jeff, we kind of had two stories headed in opposite directions, both dealing with construction this morning. And one was the Civic Center project, which, believe it or not, currently is under budget and on time. But the State House, bit of a different story, as Bronner was giving some information earlier this week, or maybe it was late last week. State House falling a bit behind schedule. That's pretty typical for a state project, huh?
Pretty typical, and I think he's going to go ahead and try to blame Trump somehow for the delays. I don't know. David Bronner overpromises, underdelivers, but people love him in Montgomery for some reason.
Yeah, so I know the naming rights, is it going to be the Bucky State House? Where are we with that?
I would think, like this legislature is totally sold out to RSA. Why not have a corporate sponsor?
That's what I'm thinking.
The Alabama Power State House.
Yeah, they need all the publicity they can use.
You had quite the day yesterday interviewing Congressman Barry Moore and Senator Tommy Tuberville, and with Trump going into the White House, I think, as loud of a voice as Tuberville has already had, I think we'll be hearing a lot more from Congressman Barry Moore and Senator Tuberville. They might be able to bend Trump's ear better than some other politicians. You think we'll see more of them here going forward now that Trump takes office?
Certainly Tommy Tuberville, who's kind of become sort of an extension of the Trump administration, United States Senate. Barry Moore, he could be a player someday. You got to remember, he's only been in, this is only going to be his third term, so we'll see where that goes. But I think certainly Tuberville, he was the first out of the gate, and he'll tell you this, to support Trump when he ran for president this time around.
First in the gate, first out of the gate. Optimism growing among small business owners, too, and that includes here in the state of Alabama. There is a lot of optimism out there with Trump coming into office. Maybe not everybody in every circle realizes it or feels it, but it seems like a lot of the nation, certainly the part of the nation that voted for Trump, feels that way.
And generally, that's the case with any new president, even Democrats, that there's a little bit of a balance going into the inauguration. I think you'll see that. I don't know where it leads. I don't know if you can, is it fair to expect the same kind of economic success that Trump had in his first term? I mean, it can't get any worse, obviously. But I don't know what the expectation ought to be, given, you know, where interest rates are and things like that going into this.
Well, it's a low bar right now. So Trump actually has got his work's not so cut out for him because it's so bad that anything he achieves is going to feel like a lot.
Yeah, and then I would say that maybe don't pass a big stimulus and a quote-unquote Inflation Reduction Act and things will be okay.
Thanks, Jeff. We'll get ready for your show.
All right, thanks for having me on.
All right, the Jeff Poor Show is on the way next, followed by Midday Mobile at noon. That does it for Mobile Mornings. Appreciate the texts and calls. Sorry we didn't get to all the texts. 251-343-0106. If you want to hop on Jeff's show, that does it for Mobile Mornings.